Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we hear from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and all that hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're asking, are polls in pole position for investors today? Polling and survey data came under fire last year as investors, like pretty much everyone else, were confounded by one political outcome after another, with the survey data apparently scuppered. So how important are polls for investors? Should we discount them, or are their insights still valuable when it comes to navigating global markets? Today we'll hear why investors should, perhaps, trust surveys less and economists more. I'm certainly sure our economists will agree with that. We'll look at a couple of specific examples around US growth, for instance, or the forthcoming French presidential elections, and consider how much trust investors should place in the polls. We start with Patrick Riff, investment strategist with the Global Asset Allocation Team at UBS CIO. How important are surveys for investors, and has this changed? Well, maybe, he says.
Well, it has certainly changed the perception among investors about the importance of these polls, especially if you now look at the French election, for another example. There's many investors that are asking if they should trust these polls or if there should be other indicators that look at it. For the French election, to me, it seems like the polls are actually fairly accurate at this point, simply because there's not an outside option to the extent that was the case with the US election or with Brexit. So events or persons to be elected that were really outside of the scope of what could be captured by these polls.
We'll come back to the specifics of the French election later. More first on this question of the importance of surveys for investors. Given the last couple of years, should they be disregarded or at the very least viewed with more cynicism? Dean Turner is economist at UBS Wealth Management CIO in London.
Investors are still going to treat polls as a primary source of information because it's one of the few sources that we do have. Another factor I would also point out is that although the polls were incorrect, let's say, in the case of the UK and the US elections, the margins of error around those polls weren't as bad as is commonly perceived. So, I mean, if we think back to the UK referendum, you know, the polls were essentially signalling that it was a 50-50 call. And but if you're taking a normal margin of error around a poll, say 2-3%, then you can get to the final result. So perhaps they weren't as bad as the press or many investors are currently saying they are today. But what that means going forward is I think that as investors, we need to be mindful of the polls clearly, but perhaps just tread a little bit more carefully and just be more aware of what the margins of errors are within these polls going forward.
Given the polls and actual political outcomes in the UK and US recently, has it made people question exactly how important surveys are for investors? Here's Bloomberg's Sebastian Selleck.
I think certainly it has because of the upsets we've seen. But at the end of the day, when you're working with a market, any information is useful, especially in the age of populism. We're looking at elections here where there's a strong chance of an upset. The winner could be someone very unorthodox. Certainly we got that with Brexit. We got that with Trump. And we could get this in the French election as well. But it's important that you don't rely solely on the polls. If you use them as part of a toolbox, other information, economic reports and other research, then I think they can be valuable, but if you rely only on them, then you could be headed for trouble.
So should the rather shaky last 18 months for pollsters prompt investors to question their reliance on polling? Paul Donovan, Global Chief Economist at UBS Wealth Management, has more.
I think it should do two things. I think it should make investors question how they interpret opinion polls, which tends to be too simplistic. You know, opinion polls don't give binary outcomes. They give possibilities and probabilities around certain outcomes. And secondly, yes, I think there is a genuine reason to question the reliance on survey-based data of any kind. And this goes beyond just politics. It incorporates quite a lot of the economic data that we look at, which has become less reliable over time.
We asked Patrick Riff, can the insights garnered from polls and surveys still be valuable when navigating global markets? And how does that process actually work?
So we try to use them with always with a grain of salt here and keep in mind that they're not always telling you exactly how people feel. There are certain biases that respondents would keep their actual intentions from these polls or that they use surveys to their advantage so that they try to essentially game these surveys, because the people that are ultimately filling out these surveys know that if the results of these surveys are high profile, that they just may skew their answers in the hope to impact the outcome or the result of these. And we try to take this into account. So we use a number of quantitative models, qualitative assessments, where we try to, on the one hand, take the results of these polls into account, and on the other hand, where we have quantitative smoothening process through these polls and surveys so that we don't get on the wrong track.
Is it principally a question of being more circumspect with what the evidence shows? What's the process? What's the methodology of using survey data in Paul Donovan's view?
Well, I think the first thing is to really understand what the surveys are doing. Understand that there is a margin of error. Understand that they're giving probabilities. And understand that if it's something like a referendum where there's very little track history that one can go for, you can't compare past votes to the current vote, there's even less that is useful in the data. So just understanding the very limitations of the data, which the survey companies, to their credit, are very upfront about, that I think is an important place to start. And then I think it is not becoming obsessed about single indicators, be they economic survey indicators or political survey indicators. I think what we need to do is use a broad range of indicators to get an overall realistic assessment of the risks around any political or economic event. Now, that doesn't sit very well with the world of hashtag economics, where everything has to be summarized in a 20-second soundbite. But economics isn't very easily summarized in a 20-second soundbite, or indeed in a tweet. You know, economics is a more complex process that we have to go through, and having a very broad range of inputs is really the best way to manage the risk.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look to the United States and to France as we consider some specific examples of the poll position. Now, US growth surveys generally look a lot rosier than the hard economic data. So which view is right about the strength of the US? Is it unhelpful, perhaps, to even ask which is right or wrong? Should it, in fact, be more about interpreting all of this to the investor's best advantage? Yes, says Paul Donovan.
It's a case of understanding how data reacts. Now, the survey data that we've been seeing, what economists call the soft data, has generally been extremely strong in the US and in Europe. But survey data, we know, tends to overreact. It tends to be political. People don't answer surveys honestly. They answer according to political bias. And there also is a tendency to exaggerate the underlying economic trends, partly because of the media, frankly, which tends to sensationalize, to exaggerate certain trends with a lot of media focus. That affects how people will answer a survey. It doesn't necessarily affect how they actually behave when it comes to spending hard-earned money. So looking at this sort of information, understanding the limitations of the surveys, and accepting that, yes, there is useful information in them, but that we shouldn't necessarily be wedded to these mechanical translations of survey results into economic reality. That's how we've got to develop, I think, future investment and economic analysis.
The US growth surveys, that softer stuff, paints a better picture than the hard data. But forget what's right or wrong. Is it more about taking a holistic view, in Patrick Riff's opinion?
I think you have to look at all of these. Right now, we think that the hard data, so the things like industrial production, like retail sales, what ultimately determines the GDP growth numbers for the Bureau of Economic Analysis in the US, is probably giving a reasonable picture of where growth in Q1 could be, although they're right now a bit too depressed, actually, so we expect a bit more. On the other hand, we think that the surveys do have some value in giving you an idea of where the underlying really trend is for the next quarters, although we think that the survey data are a bit exuberant, so to say. So ultimately, we believe that the gap between this soft and hard data will come closer together and probably somewhere in the middle.
Next, we look to France and ask, how much trust investors should place in the French presidential election polls. Should we seek other, or at least more, sources before deciding strategy? Here's Dean Turner.
I would argue the same as the last few events that we've had. I mean, the polls are not going to be an accurate reflection of the final result. That's an absolute given. But are they going to be within the ballpark? I would think that all of the evidence would suggest that, again, in this case of France, they probably will be in the ballpark. Now, what that means for an election that's looking increasingly tight, especially in the first round for France, is where they could potentially make it through to the final round. I mean, it makes it challenging because things are so close. But perhaps if we actually look at some of the second round polling data, then we've got some quite big margins there between the favoured candidates to go through. And, you know, we would have to see a very, very unusual margin of error to occur for these polls to be proved to be wildly inaccurate.
Back to Patrick Riff again for his assessment of the French polling picture.
So I think it's always advisable to take more sources, so to speak. In the case of the French elections, the polls, the margin of error around the polls, or the results that the polls indicate, for example, for the second round, and if you ask yourself the question if Le Pen is going to win or if maybe Macron or some of the other candidates is going to win, the margin of error around these polls is still, even if you assume that it's very, very high, if you actually run your own kind of statistical processes on these margin of errors, even taking that into account, the likelihood for Ms. Le Pen to win the French election are still very, very low. So I think there's still a reasonable indicator, but I would certainly advise to looking at other developments or other indicators as well, other than just the polls. So a more holistic view in that sense.
Given the polls are within the margin of error, how much trust should investors place in the French polling? According to Sebastian Salek.
The advantage you have with France is that it's a known event, it's an election, it's no new system, unlike with Brexit, where all the data was being collected from scratch, there was no precedence really. You have a much stronger base to start from, but there's always the danger of the trend that caused problems for the US election, for Brexit, for the 2015 UK election, which is voters turning out on the day and voting differently to how they say they are, because polling can only ever be accurate if the people that you're asking questions to can be believed, and that's the only way that it can really have a meaningful influence on the work that you're doing. So there's always the danger of that. But as you say, it's a turbulent race. There's really not a lot in it. If you look at the polls at the moment, Le Pen's roughly on about 23.5%. She's leading. In fourth place is Mélenchon on 18.5%. Only about 4% between the first and the fourth candidate. So by that logic, a Mélenchon win wouldn't be an upset. And the same with Le Pen. She's leading in the polls. So that you couldn't really fairly call that an upset either. So it really leaves all the options open with five candidates, a lot of options to choose from. It's a lot less binary than a lot of the votes we've seen more recently.
Finally on the programme, a slightly cheeky question, and given we're asking it of a group of economists, perhaps one with a predictable answer. Is it time to trust pollsters less and economists more? Patrick Riff admits his bias, but points out some broad issues with surveys, which are nevertheless important to bear in mind.
I am myself an economist by training, so I have a certain bias to think that way, but there are a few issues with polls and surveys that we are seeing, in the sense that the quality of many surveys has been deteriorating over recent years, given that people don't always take the time to fill in these surveys correctly, that people just answer the questions they would like to answer rather than what the questions that were actually asked. And we can see this in the fact that surveys and polls seem to overreact relative to the underlying trend. And then also the final issue that, as I alluded to before, respondents may try to influence the results of these polls in the hope of actually influencing the policy outcomes.
Earlier, Dean Turner talked about the need for caution for subjective overlay. Given that, does he think it's time to trust economists more than pollsters?
Well, as an economist, I would always argue we should trust economists. But in fairness, you know, as economists, our expertise is in looking at economic trends. And part of what we do is clearly trying to look at and understand the political dynamics. I don't think I would completely put my trust 100% in the economics profession. We're always going to need to draw on as many sources from as many experts as possible to help form our judgments.
Does Sebastian Salek think it's time to give more credence to what economists advise rather than listen to what the pollsters say?
I think you have to consider them both in combination because they are similar in many ways. Neither of them are fortune tellers. And I think that's a mistake that people fall, a trap that people fall into, thinking that statisticians are going to tell you exactly what the outcome is. Both statisticians and economists are just using the available information to help make better decisions when we don't know exactly what the future is going to hold. And remember, whilst most polls didn't predict Brexit and Trump, most economists didn't either. A lot of the big houses that we had coming onto Bloomberg were telling us about their expectations that Clinton would win the US election and that we'd get a Remain vote in the UK referendum. So they both had their mishaps when it came to it. But you've got to use them both in tandem. Use all the research you can get, as long as it's well put together, as long as it's done in good faith. It's something that can be listened to and accounted for.
And if we're talking about investors trusting surveys less and economists more, Paul Donovan explains that, in fact, economists can be similarly fallible, owing to some of the same methodologies being in their toolkit too.
Well, I think part of the issue here is that there is a large amount of data out there which is survey-based. Obviously, consumer sentiment, producer sentiment data is basically just a glorified opinion poll. And that has become noticeably less reliable over time. However, other data is also survey-based. GDP, gross domestic product, probably one of the most important data releases that we have, is essentially a survey, at least in the early stages of its release. So economists are very dependent on survey data. What we have to do, I think, is come up with a way of distinguishing the quality of the survey data that we get and perhaps say, you know what, consumer confidence, producer sentiment data is of generally lower quality than, say, consumer prices or GDP data.
And that's Paul Donovan bringing us to the end of this 132nd edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. Next week, artificial intelligence is once again in the frame. Until then, you can always listen again or find out more at monocle.com or via your preferred platform. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.